Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Michelle Madrid, the author of Let Us Be Greater, A Gentle Guided Path to Healing for Adoptees, and the host of the Electricity of You podcast. She is an international adoptee, former foster child in the UK, and an adoptee empowerment life coach who has been recognized as an Angels in Adoption honoree by the Congressional Coalition on Adoption Institute, and inducted into the New Mexico Women's Hall of Fame for her work in adoption. At the time of editing, it is October 30th, or Adoptee Remembrance Day, honoring adoptees who are no longer with us. Leading into November, or National Adoption Month, to raise awareness of the need for adoptive families for children in the foster care system. To support this conversation, Michelle and I dive inside her adoption story, the common points of pain for adoptees, as well as guidance for families considering adoption. Side by Side is now available on all major listening platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Amazon Music. Give us a like and leave us a review if you find value in our conversations. All our content is now available at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. And if you'd like to connect with me, please visit www.robertkwonhome.com. So, Michelle, it's an honor to meet you, and I'm really thrilled to be connecting with you, and particularly about your book, Let Us Be Greater, A Gentle Guided Path to Healing for Adoptees. First, congratulations on this book. It was a tremendous read for me, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Robert. That really touches my heart deeply. I appreciate that. Number one, for having me here with you to converse and to explore together, but also the time that you took to read through Let Us Be Greater. That means everything to me. So thank you.
When I got the text, I was so excited. And truth be told, it didn't occur to me when I was reading it, but this was my first time reading a book that's specifically about the subject matter of adoption and for adoptees. So I don't talk about this all the time, but I am legally adopted. I have a stepfather, and part of that adoption journey meant coming to the United States. So I was surprised with how much of the book resonated with me, even though I did not go through the foster system. But there were just so many nuances about the way it impacts us that I, anyway, it deeply resonated with me, and I think it will for many people who share similar experiences.
Oh, so I wanted to share that. Thank you for sharing that with me, because I didn't know that part of your story and journey, and I literally feel myself tingling as you say that, and as you use the word nuance and nuances of this experience, because that's certainly one of the intentions that I had in writing the book, is to better explore and to better explain the nuances of this experience that can travel with us as adoptees, no matter the adoptee experience that we have, the journey that we've been placed on, and the structure of our adoption. There are so many nuances that resonate within us deeply as adoptees. Some we may be aware of, some not, but certainly wanted to explore those nuances within Let Us Be Greater. So thank you so much for sharing that part of your personal journey.
As I got further into the book, I mean, there were just so many concepts, ideas, and the way it impacted you as you shared your thoughts and feelings that even for me, who quote unquote has lived part of this experience, I was like, wow, you're so right. I never thought about it that way. I never would have put it in that way. Actually, before we get there, I would love for listeners to know a little bit of story behind the title of the book, Let Us Be Greater, because I did see you shared a little bit of the inspiration behind the title that is based on your daughter. So for those who don't know, I'd love for you to share where you got the title from.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I am an adoptee who has adopted. And I'm an international adoptee. I was in foster care in the United Kingdom prior to being adopted by Americans. And along my own journey, I came to the decision that adoption would be a part of my journey as a parent. And I have adopted two children internationally. One, my son, Ian, from Russia, and my daughter, Eviana, from Ethiopia. And when I was in Ethiopia in 2010, I was in Addis Ababa at the orphanage, and I was holding my daughter for the very first time. She was 10 months of age. And I can share this story because I have her permission to do so. And it is part of my own evolution and journey. And so I honor my children's stories as theirs to own and to share. But I do have the permission and the blessing of my daughter to share this part of our journey together. I was holding my daughter for the first time and learning of her story, a bit of her story, and her Ethiopian name. That is Tiblet. And Tiblet, as I learned, has the translation, the meaning of let her be greater. I write about this in the book. The gentleman who found my daughter alone as a tiny baby gave her this name of Tiblet. And when I learned the translation, let her be greater, it, you know, Robert, it just washed over me like this sort of rainfall of divine blessing just pouring over me and immersing me in a truth that I needed to face at the time. Because as I held my daughter, Eviana Tiblet, I could see so much potential. I could see the beauty of her, the power of her, beyond the circumstance of her earliest experience, life experience. And I could see all of that. It was almost as if it was flashing through my mind in front of, you know, my eyesight, like a movie. And it was so clear and so distinct. And as I held my daughter, I had this vivid thought of why can't I see the same potential and promise in myself? Yeah. Why is it that my earliest circumstance as a child relinquished in the United Kingdom, placed in foster care, labeled in foster care as difficult to place, lesser than in so many ways, and then my adoption into America, ultimately into a home with a parent who suffered and struggled with alcoholism. Why have all of these things somehow diminished a sense of self-worth inside of me?
Right.
And I felt like my daughter's name was this moment, this gift that had been passed on to me in this divine way of awakening to a moment where I needed to start doing some deep, deep, deep healing work to discover within myself the worth and the power that I was witnessing in my young daughter. And so Let Us Be Greater, the title of the book, is really the mantra that comes from that story standing there of what I embarked on really in that moment is a deep dive into my own self-exploration to turn my points of pain through this adoptee experience into points of light and empower myself forward through really soul work modalities. It all started on the ground there in Ethiopia.
When I read that in the book, it just touched me so much, both in the connection you shared with your daughter that to many seems so unlikely, but even the connection to the kindness of a stranger, the man who gave the name, even that moment strikes me as being so impactful. And it was just, it's a stranger, right? Yeah. Anyway, thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah.
And you bring up this point. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add, Eviana Tiblet was very ill I discovered when we brought her home to the States that she was suffering from Giardia, which is a parasite from her exposure to unclean water while in Ethiopia. And she was diagnosed with failure to thrive. And the name Eviana, because we are, you know, I am as an adoptee whose name was changed from Julia Dawn to Michelle Anne upon my adoption. I'm very sensitive to the changing of names as adoptees. But what I wanted to add there is Eviana, as we added to her name Tiblet, is very powerful because it means living water. And wow. We wanted to honor her strength in overcoming the Giardia and a prayer, you know, through this name, Eviana, which means living water, that she would also be a source of, I think, renewal for those who, you know, don't have access to living water, clean water around the world. She is very passionate about that. And so her name is, yes, wow. A combination, but it very much ties into her story, Eviana, living water, Tiblet, let her be greater. And I think it is a display, if you will, or a reflection of, I believe, the power she possesses to go forward in her life and change the world in the unique ways that she's called to do so.
Well, and that's all thanks to the connection and these kind of magical moments of opportunity, right, that we happen upon. Yeah. And you touch on something, which is about Julia Dawn, which is going to be my next question. You've spoken about some of her experiences. Is there anything else that you want to share about Julia Dawn, what happened to her, and also the concept for us of the first me? This is something that struck me so clearly because I could never put my words around my relationship to my identity before I came to America. And here you were giving it a solid name. So what's been the gift of reconnecting with Julia Dawn? And what does it mean for you to have both, to really be connected to both Julia Dawn and also Michelle?
I'm tingling again, Robert, because it's such a beautiful and important question. I think the feeling disconnected from that little girl was really hard for me, and I didn't have the words to put to it early on. But as a child, I felt somehow inside of me disconnected from an essential part of my identity, essential part of my story, an essential part of who I was and am. And I didn't know how to explore the grief and the loss that I felt over losing that part of myself, not being able to speak to Julia Dawn inwardly or outwardly, sort of feeling that I had to place her into this space of exile, if you will, and try to forget her existence. It caused a lot of suffering growing up because she's an innate part of who I am. She is me. And so as I began to do my own self-healing work, I began to realize that that little girl exists inside of me, that she had dreams, and that what happened to her happened to me and vice versa, that we had gone through this experience together. We were not isolated from each other during the relinquishment of our mother, the placement in foster care, the experience of that, the adoption into America, that we were together in all of that. And I didn't understand that for a very long time because I thought that even thinking about Julia Dawn was somehow dishonoring the parents who had adopted me. And I felt somehow guilty for even ever thinking of her or reflecting on her existence within me. When I began to connect to Julia Dawn, claiming her outwardly, even saying her name, the moment I said her name was like, it felt so liberating for me. And it was the moment where I began to truly build a bridge back to the first me. I refer to the first me as the person we were before adoption happened in our lives. We don't enter the world as blank slates as adoptees. Something happened to us. A shift occurred in our lives, and that experience is brought into our new surroundings and situation, our new families. And those parts of ourselves need to be tenderly tended to. And that's what I began to do. I began to look at Julia Dawn, to bring her out into the light from a place of darkness, and to love her and to listen to the whisperings of what she had to say, what she wanted to share, and how she wanted to guide me forward. As I also, as the current me, the big me, took her hand and said, let's move forward together, finally together, no longer separate from one another. So the first me is the name that I gave to Julia Dawn. And I find that in the adoptees I coach, it's a powerful, powerful exercise to go back and to write a compassionate letter to that young person who wants to come forward, whether that person is 7 months old or 7 years old. It makes no difference. It's the earliest part of yourself that wants to come and be reclaimed by you and connect with you. And you begin to create this relationship back to a wholeness and identity that I think is absolutely essential for every person. Yes, specifically for adoptees, but I also think non-adoptees, there's so many things in life as children that can make us disconnect from the dreams that we hold, the worth that we have innately. Getting back to that person and listening to the that inner knowing, that inner wisdom is very powerful. And in fact, yesterday, Robert, I was looking at a picture of Julia Dawn. She is sitting in a rocker. And she's in her jammies, and on her lap is her favorite stuffed doggy, stuffed animal, and his name was Brown Dog. I lost him in the canals of Venice as a child, and it was devastating to me, he was very special to me. And it was interesting because behind the rocker was a toy horse standing sort of in the shadows. And it's interesting because I think to myself, if we were to allow ourselves to go back and really look at childhood photos and really look for the clues within those photos, we can be led back to the things that I think the place where our deepest desires await us. I am an equestrian, and for a long time, I lost that desire. I would tell myself, I can't have horses. I don't want to connect with horses because my birth mother's family was very much involved in the equestrian world in the United Kingdom. I want to disconnect from that place. Yet there in the photo of Julia Dawn were horses and doggies in my lap and horses right behind me. And I'm like, it's no wonder that today I love animals so, and they're such a sacred part of my own healing. If we are just able to reconnect within a photo, a childhood photo of ourselves, and begin the connection back to our first me in that way, there's so many clues that await us there. I have photos, Robert, of myself as a child in my office, in my closet, on my phone. I'm always connecting to that first me, that youngest little person, because there's a lot of wisdom there. And I beg of us all to trust in the wisdom of our youngest selves and to ask and look for the clues that await us there into what are the passions and the purpose that we hold today that we really want to reconnect to and live out in our lives.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think so much of what you spoke about in your book and also your work with as a coach, to me, and you let me know if I'm wrong, but to me seems to be deeply rooted in inner child healing, like that level of healing work. And it's no wonder it can be a tricky area. Like, for you talk about your passion for horse riding coming back after doing this, going on this journey. And for me, I couldn't really reconnect playing the piano until I did my own version of the inner child healing work. You see some photos here of my family I put behind me, you know, in front of my altar. I started really just making myself see what's real for me. And it wasn't until later that I was like, oh, this is a form of processing that is nonverbal, right? For me playing the piano and maybe for you horse riding. Mm-hmm. And so much of it, I truthfully did not necessarily see it through the lens of my adoption journey or my immigrant journey. But when you put it in that way, it just illustrated how much these life experiences can impact us and how important it is for us to reconcile that, right? So again, so much of your experience sounds like so much of it resonates with me. And just even in your experience of being an international adoptee. So, you know, maybe we can define some terms. Obviously, domestic versus international is pretty understood, but you also said open versus closed adoptions. And then later on, you talked about transracial and transcultural adoptions. Could you quickly touch on those particular words and what they might imply?
Absolutely. So open adoption, and I believe that is more and more common today than it was when I was growing up. Closed adoption was far more common when I was growing up. And that is when there is little information known from the birth parent side. Records are closed, are locked away. And there's very much, a line that is drawn from an adoptee's ability to connect with birth parents, birth family, birth information, medical information, et cetera. Open adoption is just that. It can look different ways depending on the arrangement, but there is knowledge of, in open adoption, the birth parent side. Maybe there's knowledge of medical information. Maybe there is communication on some level with birth parents or birth family, and relationships are more open for the adoptee, as well as of course, the adoptive parents being able to connect with birth parents. It can look very different, you know, and individual with each situation, but it is just more open information, the ability to connect with those birth family members more open. Transracial is when a child is adopted by parents outside of their race. Transcultural, when an adoptee is adopted into a family outside of their own culture. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just so important for people to understand the honoring of the adoptee's fullest story is so key. Their culture, their race, their first country, first language. It is so important to honor that as the adoptee goes and grows, because that is a part of who they are. And I think, looking back at my own bringing up as an adoptee, yes, it was a closed adoption, but I think what was also closed was close communication between me and my adoptive parents, of really me being able to express to them my innermost feelings, thoughts, questions, hurts, sense of loss, grief. My adoptive mother would often say to me, when I would try to approach her with a question or a feeling of loss or just confusion or just the wanderings of my own internal journey, she would say, you know, I saved you from a really hard place. Just be grateful and don't look back, just move forward. And I think what that did was it just made me feel like my own thoughts and emotions weren't worthy of being explored. And that somehow also brought up a great sense of guilt within me for even having those thoughts, feelings, questions in the first place. Adoptees need to be able, as we all need to be able in our lives, to be transparent and to have open, supportive conversation within family when we're going through, our own development, the trials and tribulations of growing up. It's so important to have those safe spaces to come and be real and raw, be able to be vulnerable and transparent in front of another. There's a lot of, when we were saying about disconnecting from, you know, playing the piano, I disconnected from my grand love of horses that is seated within my DNA. I think we can fall into patterns of people-pleasing so easily as adoptees, and we begin living what others want for us, who they want us to be, what they want us to do, what they want us to say, how they want us to feel. And we lose contact with our own words, our own thoughts, our own feelings, our own desires. And getting back to that place is absolutely key and essential in order to move into a place of wholeness where you're living your life and not someone else's life. That's absolutely key for each and every adoptee.
Thank you for sharing that. You really illustrated some of the common areas of struggle between adoptees and their adoptive family. Mm-hmm. And not out of blame or malice either, but just out of these are some of the things that have come up historically as a pattern, and it's okay to look at them for yourself and also with your family. So if an adoptee, like you say, does struggle to find information, first of all, I loved your journey and your audacity and tenacity in finding all this information about yourself. Somehow, even for me, on the sidelines, it was so inspiring. And it does make me wonder if you work with someone who sort of like they tried, but in reality, they don't have that much information that they can go on, either about their history or their lineage, anything like that. Where might you have them look at what's next and what's possible if they encounter that?
Oh, all of the closed doors, right? All of the ways that the doors can be sort of slammed shut in our face, and we think that maybe that's the end. I can share a story, Robert. You know, when I was a teenager, the first time I went back to England to have reunion with my bio mom, I went back thinking that she had all the answers. And that I was going to go. It would be this huge transformational moment where she would, you know, share with me everything that I wanted to know, and I would receive from her just the love, the open arms embrace that I was so craving for as long as I could remember. And I remember that first reunion. It was in the summer in England, and on one particular day, I was sitting outside in the garden with my mom, and she was soaking up a rare English sun, and a neighbor came from across the street, and the neighbor said, "Oh, who do we have here?" And she pointed to me, and I looked at my mom, and she was very quiet, almost had a look of panic in her eyes, and there was this very uncomfortable pause, and she said, "Oh, this is Michelle. She's a relative from the United States." And I remember in that moment, my heart just crumbling into a gazillion pieces, because I expected in that moment for my mom to say, "This is my daughter. Her name is Michelle. And, you know, she was adopted into America and she's here and we're having a reunion," and, you know, just to claim me as her daughter and to welcome the truth of our mother-daughter relationship, to share that openly. And it was just another door shut closed in my face. And when the neighbor walked away, I said to my mom, "Why didn't you tell her the truth?" And she said, "It's none of her business. I didn't think she needed to know." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I needed to hear you say it, Mom." Mm-hmm. But what I learned from that experience so young as a teen was that I was putting a lot of power on people outside of myself, situations outside of myself, to define me, to answer questions that I had, to arrive at a sense of worthiness, inclusion in my life, and that perhaps I had the power structure all mixed up. And I talk about this in the book, the shifting of power structure from them to me, from outside world to inner world. And so certainly I would say that if you feel closed in your ability to find out the information as an adoptee that you're searching for, if you feel frustrated along the search, one place to start would be my book, Let Us Be Greater, because, and I say that, Robert, because there is a wealth of information that lives within us as adoptees that we have somehow been brought to a belief that we're disempowered from accessing. And there are soul work modalities that we can practice and make part of our daily lives that can help us open ourselves up to an inner knowledge, an inner knowing, a place of inner reunion. The greatest reunion you will ever have is the reunion of coming home to yourself. The greatest abandonment you will ever experience is the abandonment of yourself, of your truth, of your identity. And so my book explores these ways of coming back home to a sense of wholeness, of reclaiming, reclamation of identity, of truth, and trusting in a timing that you know, information answers will come along this journey. This is a lifelong journey. We will not get our answers in a day. Some answers that we seek out won't come to us, but I promise you that something else will, and it will inform the other question that you have. I didn't have the chance to meet my birth father face to face. But when I found him, he had already passed away, but I found a brother I never knew that I had. I write about him in the book. And through my brother, I've learned so much about my father. And messages from my father have come through my brother and also through intuitive work with other intuitives and just sitting in a place of stillness and asking my father to come to me and to share with me. There's such depth in this place of internal knowing. And it is where I believe every adoptee can be freed up, liberated into a more vast way of seeing themselves, of seeing their experience, and of understanding that we are not limited. We can take limiting beliefs, transform them into the limitless truth of who we are and who we're here to be. And that is such a deep, internal, beautiful, boundless journey. And that's the journey that I hope to take adoptees on. Aside from that, absolutely connect with other adoptees. Yes. Ask about their own journeys of reclamation, of reunion. Who have they been in contact with? Who were their support systems along the way? We are a community that is here to help one another. We are here to walk each other home. So I think the greatest bit of help is to also reach out to adoptees individually and collectively, because we are here for one another and we stand for each other. And the conversation that we're trying to have as an adoptee community is here to educate and elevate this conversation. As you said, it's not here to be a conversation of blaming or resent or anger. Yes, we may feel those things along the way, and that's important along the journey of healing. But I believe at the core of our intention as an adoptee community is to educate and elevate this conversation so people can glean a deeper understanding, a more clear understanding of what it is really like to live this experience as adoptees.
Yeah. I mean, the part that you spoke about where you said this is also a community in and of itself, there are others like you who will know exactly or will just resonate deeply with your lived experiences, and you would never know that until you either find it through something like this book or connecting with other adoptees like you. I think that is something that is always possible for all of us. And you also bring up something that you write about in the book, which are the different pain points that adoptees can experience, right? And I want to defer to you in how you might want to touch on this, where we can definitely go through them a little bit at a time. But I was also going to suggest, I'm curious, in looking at these 8 pain points that show up frequently, is there one that's been showing up thematically recently, or a particular pain point that has been on your mind or showing up in your work that you like to spotlight? We can do it that way too.
Oh, yes. I'll quickly just state the points of pain that I focus on in the book. There's the feeling of being unwelcome in the world, the pain point of broken bonds, and just a deep sense of loss, being denied access to truth, a sense of familial rejection, whether that's from bio family or adoptive family, and the words that harm us within this conversation, the pain of distrust, banished biology, pleasing others versus pleasing the self. and just a lack of transparency and acceptance in our lives. And that can be a lack of transparency and acceptance from outer world or also from our own inner world. There is, a pain point that shows up a lot is just this pain point of feeling that you have to please others in order to stay safe. As if you are living a facade in your life, it feeds into it. The adoptees who say, I feel like a foreigner in my life, an alien in my own life. I feel like I'm living on the fringes of my life, outside looking in, because there's a sense of disempowerment to be who they're here to be, to use the talents that they're here to use that feel most true for them, versus being who someone else wants you to be, because that person had a desire to adopt a child and they had their own thoughts and beliefs about who that child would be. And when you live under that heavy veil of living someone else's truth for who you are, because you want to stay safe from rejection, you want to be loved, you want to be included and embraced into the family that you've been given, you become disconnected from your own truth, your own sense of identity, your own sense of purpose, your light dims, your voice gets softer, and you just grow smaller in your life. And I think adoptees are hungry to reclaim that sense of truth in who they are, the life that they are here to lead, and also to understand that it is okay for them to please themselves first, to put themselves first, to pour into themselves and to reconnect to their own thoughts, feelings, desires, dreams. And how do we become who we're here to be if we're disconnected from that place? So I see this pain point as one that is there beneath the surface, but for some reason lately, it's coming up more and more and more as people are awakening into the importance of being who they are here to be, speaking their truth and claiming their lives, and the acceptance of it is okay to love me, to put me first in decision making and not hurt me by doing what others want me to do just because I fear their rejection, of actually understanding that rejecting myself is the greatest rejection of all, and just to move back into a place of self-love that is so healing and so needed in our lives today. Always been needed, Robert, but certainly as adoptees, we are seeing the damage that has been done through living a life that has not been authentic to who we're truly here to be and who we truly are. I think that is a pain point that resonates deeply within the adoptee community.
Yeah, and as a coach myself, these pain points, truthfully, I think many people would connect, relate to it, resonate with it, no matter what their early childhood experience may be. These are, I think, just experiences that most of us will sort of understand just being on this earth. So I love the way that you framed it, because even that, I think there's commonality shared between adoptees and people who are not adoptees. Mm-hmm. And I did watch your TED Talk. I think it's from 2018 about. And in there, I did think it was important that you brought up some statistics. So I'm wondering, whatever you might have available or the latest statistic, for example, I remember in that presentation, it was estimated about 500,000 adoptees exist in the United States alone. Are there some statistics that you want to draw attention to at this time regarding adoptees and adoption?
Such a good question. And I think what is very important to highlight as we move toward October 30th, Adoptee Remembrance Day, and also as we move into November, Adoption Awareness Month, Adoptee Awareness Month, it's very timely that you ask me that on this day, because adoptees in the U.S. are four times more likely to end their lives via suicide than non-adoptees, four times more likely. And this statistic is mirrored across the globe, other countries who have done similar studies. The Nordic countries mirror this statistic closely. Australia came out with a research on their international, inter-country adoptee population. And they found that adoptees in Australia were 2 times more likely to end their lives via suicide. And so much of what is mirrored in Let Us Be Greater is also mirrored within this body of research that's being done, where adoptees will say the deep sense of hurt that they feel that has caused them to disconnect from their sense of being authentic to who they are, looking at themselves as worthy of asking the question of what do I want in my life? Who am I in this life? The microaggressions that can occur, the words that can be used that harm, like, you know, just be grateful. It seems like a benign statement, right? But when said to an adoptee, when they're sharing a sense of pain or wanting to explore a pain point they feel within them, to say to them, just be grateful, can be very harmful. So we have to be careful of our words, because this disconnection to a sense of self and a truth of identity, the words that can shut down our ability to heal and go deep and excavate the pain points that are harboring themselves deep within us, that sense of not being able to be transparent, open, honest, vulnerable in our lives is causing adoptees to take their own lives. And if I was going to bring out any statistic today, it would be that this conversation is needed. It's important because we're here to save lives. We're here for adoptees who right now feel very much alone in this struggle, to know that they are not alone and that the feelings that they're having, the hurts that they are experiencing are valid, and they need to be lovingly explored, compassionately held. And there's a community here to hold their hand and help them through, because what we want from them is to step out of the dark place into the light of who they are here to be. We need them here. And so that statistic alone for me is standout. And I think it really is a call to action that we need these conversations more and more inside of this community and also outside of this community to truly understand this experience as adoptees.
Yeah, absolutely. So for individuals and couples and families considering adoption, you know, after all that is said and done, which I think they should definitely pick up this book, by the way, not just for adoptees, but yeah, just general words of advice or things that you would have them think about, look at, pay attention to if they're considering the adoption process.
To understand first and foremost that your child comes to you with a first chapter. You know, how many of us pick up a book and start reading at chapter 2 or 3? You know, we usually want to read the intro and chapter 1 so we get the fullest understanding of the book that we're reading and the author's intent, right? So we get the fullest experience of the story. And I think it's very important for anyone who is considering adopting a child to understand that your child is not a blank slate, that they come with a whole lot of information, and that their earliest programming, which may have happened in the womb, I believe our stories begin in the womb as adoptees. We take in a whole lot of information from those earliest times. And there's scientific, you know, backup to that statement. I write about that in the book. But yes, to understand that, if you understand that in utero programming is real, and what happens right after a child being brought into the world, that experience is real. It offers us as a baby a lot of information about our own sense of worth, of being welcome into the world. So all of that comes with the child into the new surrounding, the experience of relinquishment, of removal, of displacement comes with them. And so to be open and aware that your child is coming into your family with this information, that their life doesn't start at the point of adoption. And to really embrace that coming in, to be able to stand with them, to be with them, to say, I know that what you're feeling is real as they go and as they grow. I'm here to support you. How can I help you? I want to help. I want to understand. Keep that open communication going and ask yourself, you know, at times where your child might be saying something that feels very personal to you, ask yourself, could this be trauma? Could this be something that is rooted in their earliest sense of loss, their earliest experience as an adoptee? Because we have to get to the point where we understand that adoption loss is real. A loss had to happen for an adoption to ever occur. Something had to be severed before something else could be sown. And we want to pay attention to those places within the adoptee that feel severed, so that they don't feel isolated and alone. We want to facilitate those conversations. So I think anyone considering adoption should understand this, and that your child is here to grow into who they're here to be, not to fulfill some empty space inside of yourself. No child should feel the weight of that on their little, young, innocent shoulders. They're here to be who they're going to be, with all the talents that they've been given, to really step into that place of identity and self-love and self-knowing. And we, I think, as parents are here to facilitate that and help them usher forward into their life that way of being. So that would be my advice. Stay open. Understand that your child is coming to you not as a blank slate, but as a child who's been through something very real. Trauma is not a bad word, but we must tend to that trauma, and to allow our children space to discover who they are here to be. What beautiful gifts to offer to a child as their parent, and also, by the way, to offer to ourselves. You know, we can't give what we have yet to receive. So as, you know, potential adoptive parents, I would also ask myself, what do I need right here and right now to come to a deeper sense of wholeness, self-love for myself before I began parenting a child? I think those are really important questions and concepts to explore.
Yeah, both to look at the adoption pain and also, as you write in the book, the joy of being chosen and the fact that they lay side by side and both are equally true and they both deserve attention. And again, when someone else described it in that way, it made so much sense to me based on my journey as well. So I have one final question before we talk about ways that people could connect with you and things like that. What is your definition of family? And what makes a family at the end of the day?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think family is a constellation of souls and hearts that have come together to live this physical journey. First and foremost, we are souls. We came from somewhere. We entered into these physical states of being, and our souls will go somewhere after this. But what a beautiful gift, while in this physical experience, to experience one another and to delight as family in the diversity of each individual, to honor their individual journey, the unique talents that they bring into the world, and to help support each other. And to never say, as family members, you have to be one way in order to be loved and accepted within this constellation, within this family, that you are free and safe and welcome to be who you are. And we are going to delight in that, and we are going to celebrate that, and we are going to learn from each other. We're going to learn from our differences, and we will grow stronger, wiser, individually and collectively as a family. Family, I just think, is that space where you can come and know that you're going to be seen and heard as you are without judgment, and you're going to be loved unconditionally. For me, that's family. I think it's very important to congregate as family members around a table and eat and talk and share the dynamics of a day, to be able to share your feelings and know that, you know, we do something in my family where it's called, passing the spoon. Basically, it's like a wooden spoon, or if we don't have a spoon around, we have anything, a book, a remote control. And we work through anything by whoever is holding that spoon or that remote control or that book or whatever, that item, that object. While they are holding it, they are heard. And they are heard until they say it, and that's what I feel like saying. And then that item is passed on to someone else to continue to share their thoughts or to respond to that person's sharing. I just think family is about creating that space to be held and loved and known. That is so important. And I certainly hope as a parent, both biologically and adoptive, that we have created sacred space for just that. And as you mentioned, the loss of adoption, and also the fact that the sense of being chosen as an adoptee, and every adoptee will have their individual take on that. But I think what you're getting at is the both and of life, the shadow and shine of life, the pain and the gain in this lived experience. And I think as family, we need to be able to hold that for each other, the both and of this experience, and love each other through it all.
I'm taking all of that in. It was particularly the image of passing around the spoon. I'm thinking about that with like people I'm close to, and to be able to have a space where we can actually see each other and listen to each other in that way. Mm. What a wonderful way of connecting with people family.
Yeah. And it's very important, because how many times do we start to share and someone says, well, no, that's not it. That's not, let's give this person the space they need to share everything that they're feeling, know that they're being heard, know that through it all they are loved. And then when they get to the point where they say, and that is what I feel like sharing or saying, mm-hmm. and then that, you know, object is passed on, and a more holistic, I think, way of communicating within family is created. And I've seen it, you know, I've seen my children work through disagreements in beautiful, loving ways where at the end they're hugging each other and everyone is feeling very much seen and heard. And I think as human beings, that's what we long for. We long to be truly seen, heard, and understood. And that's an exercise that seems to work, at least within my family. It's been very productive and helpful.
Yeah. Something I want to try to emulate maybe in my own life. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Michelle, this is such a pleasure and a joy in speaking to you about this topic that clearly I just kind of felt like it was time for me to dive into this somehow. And the timing just sort of worked out. And isn't that always how it is, how it tends to be in life? So thank you for sharing this book with me and also with readers everywhere. What are some ways that people can connect with you and your work? And is there anything that you want to spotlight coming up that you want to share with people?
Thank you so much. Number one, I want to say, I am so grateful to know on this day that you are part of my tribe. You're a part of the adoptee community. And thank you for sharing how the book has resonated with you along your own journey and has met you where you are right here and right now. That's a blessing to me. And so I thank you for that. Come and see me at themichellemadrid.com. That is my website. The Electricity of You is the light that I dance in as I share my message and my work, reconnecting to a place of light within us, the power force that we all possess within us, coming back to that place, reigniting that sense of knowingness and illuminating our lives forward. All concepts that I love to explore, adoptee and non-adoptee. So themichellemadrid.com. And I would love folks to connect with me on Instagram at themichellemadrid. I'd love to connect with you there as well. Coming up, and this will be released in November or very early December. If you go to themichellemadrid.com, you can get on the wait list. But I have an online program coming out called Reclaim. And this is all about reclaiming our identity, our voices, reclaiming abundant love, joy in our lives as adoptees. It's an online program. Some of these concepts, steps to rediscover your truth, your voice, and reignite the light that you're here to shine. All of that will be included within this online program, and I'd love folks to come and learn more about that. We're going to start a community on Facebook to share our experiences as we move through Reclaim. So that's coming up, and I'm really excited to share a new way of coaching within this Reclaim online program.
Yes, I'll be sure to hyperlink all of the materials that you've listed that we can find, and that so that people can click on it under whatever platform they find this conversation. So, Michelle, thank you for your time today. This is such a pleasure, and I hope we can reconnect again in some way. Yeah, this
thank
is
you.
Reading this book was very felt very meaningful for me. So,
thank you. That means everything to me. Thank you, Robert, for having me.